Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
So, have you heard the latest? You know that new girl, Ruth? Some people are saying she's not the poor little foreign widow she claims to be. Of course, I wouldn't say that. By all accounts, she did come back from Moab with Naomi. Now, that poor woman has certainly suffered, losing her husband and two sons. But, what do you expect when you take your family to a pagan land? Am I right? Bless her heart. But this Ruth woman, she just shows up one day in Boaz's field, and all of a sudden, he's calling her daughter and treating her better than the rest of us who actually work for him. I didn't get that kind of special treatment. Did you? Okay. All right. To her credit, she did arrive at the crack of dawn, and she worked like the dickens with the rest of us through the day. And let's face it, gleaning is risky business. There are landowners who make it very difficult on women who glean, not to mention some field hands who are less than respectful. And that brings me to my next point. How did she know that Boaz is one of the good ones? That he runs a tight ship and he will not stand for that nonsense? Some people might say there's no way that a foreigner just arriving in Bethlehem could know that. Of course, I wouldn't say that. Maybe she just got lucky. Suppose maybe our God directed her here. That is, if you can believe our God would bless a Moabitess. Bless her heart. Ruth did work hard, I'll give her that. She kept up with the most experienced of us through the day. She went home with quite a haul of barley. She brought home half her lunch to share with Naomi. Maybe she is who she says she is. She certainly seems to be concerned about taking care of Naomi. But, some people might wonder why a pagan from Moab would up and leave her own people and hitch herself to a woman with no prospects. I wouldn't say that. Maybe she is who she claims to be. Maybe she does have Naomi's best interests at heart. I just find it unlikely that she'll find a place with our people long term. Bless her heart.
Well, I just want to take a moment to welcome a certain group of people that are here today. There is a rather large Seventh-day Adventist robotics tournament taking place at Forest Lake Academy's gym tomorrow. And so I know we have several of the teams that are actually worshiping with us today. I think there are a couple here during first service, maybe a couple during second. And so we just want to say, hey, we're praying for you. Good luck tomorrow and have a great time. And for the rest of you, if you want to go watch something kind of cool, the main part of the competition happens between 1 and 4 in the gym over at Forest Lake Academy. It's really kind of a neat thing if you've never seen this before. So they have to create these robots that do different tasks and very cool stuff. Anyway. Welcome. And we are so glad everybody's here. Yeah. I need a seven-year-old. Do we have anybody who's 7 years old here today that's willing to come up front? Are you 7 years old? I heard an I am. Was there an I am? Anybody 7 years old? Where is it? Oh, are they okay with, do they want to come up or don't want to come up? Lennon, will you come up? Ah, oh, come on up, Lennon. Lennon's eight, but he's going to help me out. He helped me out during first service. I was going to give somebody else another shot, but you know what? Good help is hard to find sometimes. All right, so Lennon, you're eight. Okay, that's helpful because the person in my story is seven. So that's, eight's pretty close to seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can work with this? Yeah, okay, we can work with this. All right, okay. So the boy in my story, he's 7 years old. Let me ask you this. If I told you that I would make you king today, how would you feel about that?
Really good.
Okay, excellent. I'm scared to ask you what your first act would be, but we'll go ahead and save that. People can ask you later. So just so that we get the hang of things, let's go ahead and put that little crown on you. Let's everybody see what that looks like. Yeah. Looks pretty good to me. It seems to fit well. So I'm telling your parents that you're the king now. Is that okay? I was actually asking them. Were they? I know. So let's back up a little bit here. So in the story that I'm trying to tell everybody, there was a king named Joash, and he became king when he was 7 years old. It's a longer, more involved story, and I don't really have time to tell you the whole thing. I just need you to know that he was 7 years old, and when they made him king, they brought him into the temple. And it wasn't just any temple. It was the temple that Solomon had built. And they bring Joash into this temple. And the Bible says in 2 Kings chapter 11, verse 14, the king, 7-year-old king, is standing by the pillar. And here's what I want you to notice. According to the custom. Now, there was actually two pillars, two main pillars that are being referenced here that were at the entrance of the temple. They were really big. After first service, somebody helped me understand the difference between circumference and diameter, and I appreciate that. They weren't quite as big as they were during first service. but still big, all right? So they're 18 feet in circumference, which would be about 6 feet in diameter for those of you who understand math. I do not. So I'm thinking 6 feet is probably pretty close to the size of this right here, probably 18 feet in circumference, pardon me. That's pretty much that size. Now, they were 28 feet tall. So if you look up at the ceiling here, the ceiling is just a little bit short of that height. So can we all just agree these are rather large pillars? Okay. And as was the custom, the king, in this case a 7-year-old, stood by the pillar. Lennon, would you feel kind of small if you were standing by that pillar that's you know, that big around and, you know, that tall?
Yeah.
Yeah. It would make you feel kind of small? Yeah. Do you think it would make me feel small even though I'm taller than you?
Yeah.
So no matter the age of the king, you'd feel small?
Yeah.
Okay. You have definitely served your purpose. You've been excellent. You can go sit down. Thank you. So we've established that the kings would stand by the pillar in the temple. It was what they did. It was their custom. So let's look at one more king that we find recorded standing by that same pillar. Those pillars, there are two of them. And this is another king that was young. His name was King Josiah. And Josiah did something amazing. Basically, the temple that Solomon had built had fallen into disrepair by the time he became king. And so he ordered that it be repaired. And as often happens during construction projects, you stumble into things you didn't know you had. You know what I'm saying? You're going through things, you find things. And so what happens is that during Josiah's reign, as they're doing this, they find the book of the law, which they had apparently lost. The book of the law. And so they start reading it, and it's read to King Josiah, and he becomes deeply upset because he realizes that he and his people are not following the law that God had handed down to Moses and the Israelites. And he becomes very upset, and he says, we got to change this. And so he calls all his people together and puts them in one place. And the king stood by the, which was the custom, and made a covenant before the Lord. So he stands by this pillar and he makes a covenant to walk after the Lord and to keep his commandments, his provisions, and his statutes with his heart and all his soul. Standing by the, in the temple. Pillars hold things up. And it was the, I know, I'm very confusing. As was the custom. All right, there we go. Now we're back on track. Although a couple of you are looking at me a little funny. What's wrong? Is this not the sermon you were expecting for Ruth chapter 2? Oh, I just realized we're in 2 Kings, aren't we? Did I get ahead of myself? There's a split opinion here. I'm sorry, you guys. You came to church today because we're doing a series on the book of Ruth. And a couple of you are like, I want my money back. I would not have come for 2 Kings. I came for the book of Ruth. I am sorry. I am all about making you happy. Let's go to the book of Ruth. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's go to, I am going to have to go to Leviticus first. Can we do that? I'm sorry. I apologize. I know we are going to talk about, in fact, let me just jump into the book of Ruth. Chapter 1, we did last week. If you're not familiar with this, if you haven't heard the story before, I do want to catch you up really quick. So those of you who know the story, just bear with, okay? We want to make sure that everybody's caught up. The book of Ruth, the main characters are two people, Naomi and Ruth, both women. And in Ruth chapter 1, what we find is that Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their two boys move out of Israel from Bethlehem to the land of Moab. They get to Moab and her boys marry people from Moab, which was a no-no. You're not supposed to do that. Again, you have to go watch last week's sermon if you want to get all the details on that. But they do that. Then Naomi's husband Elimelech dies. And then her two boys die. So now she's a widow with two daughters-in-law. And she hears that things have gotten better back in Bethlehem where she's from. So she says, I'm going to go back. She heads back. And along the way, she has a kind of change of heart. She says to her daughters-in-law, look, you're not from where I'm from. Why don't you go home to your parents, remarry? You can live your best life there with, you know, the things you're used to. And one of the daughters-in-law says, fantastic. Read the story. It's not exactly like that, but it's just fantastic. I'm out. And heads back. She argued a little bit before she did it. And then Ruth, on the other hand, the other daughter-in-law says, no, where you go, I'm going to go. Where you die, I'll die. Where you're buried, I'll be buried. Beautiful story. Watch last week's sermon or just read Ruth chapter 1, okay? So now we get to chapter 2. Ruth and Naomi have arrived in Bethlehem. They're living there. Widows in this time period were not in a good situation. There were not a lot of different ways to make money. And the problem for Naomi is that most likely she and Elimelech had family land in Bethlehem, but most likely we had had to sell that land because of their debts, and it had probably been taken. And so here's the thing, though. Again, and I can't really go into all this detail with you right now, but I need you to understand a basic idea of Israelite law. Basically, you couldn't sell your land. It always had to stay in the family, but you could sell the land, but then it would revert back after 50 years. Are we all confused or no? Okay, are we still with me? Okay. So because land could never permanently leave the family. It could temporarily leave the family. And so most likely the land that Naomi had been mortgaged. And now she doesn't have anything to support herself. It may have even reverted to another distant, more distant relative because, again, land couldn't leave the family. And so she and Ruth are in a really bad situation because what happens when you can't work? It's hard to eat. And, you know, there was no, you know, here in America we have, you know, we have some safeguards, right, for people who we have some of those. And back then, you know what, back then they did have some safeguards. Remember I said I was going to go to Leviticus? Let's take a look at one of the safeguards that Israel had. In Leviticus 19, God's talking, and there's actually more than one place where this is reiterated, but this is the one that I wanted you to look at. When you harvest the crops of your land, do not harvest the grain along the edges. Some versions say along the margins. So if you're thinking really hard, you think, okay, Ken, how big is a margin then? How much is the edge? What does it mean not to harvest along the edge? You know, God doesn't tell them. He leaves it up to them. It doesn't say it needs to be 6 feet, needs to be 2 feet. It just says leave a margin, leave an edge. And do not pick the harvest, do not pick up what the harvesters drop. So when they're cutting the grain, if some of it falls on the ground before they're able to wrap it up, that has to stay on the ground. They can't go and pick it up and add it into the sheaf. Leave them for the poor, and the foreigners living among you. So it turns out Israel did have a little social safety network. For who? The poor. And which category did Ruth fall into? Both. Both. Naomi fell into the poor. Ruth fell into the foreigner and the poor. So somehow Ruth finds out about this law and goes to Naomi and says, Naomi, I want to go ahead and go out and provide for us. So I need to do this. And it seems like Naomi probably may have been a little bit more elderly and not physically able to do this because she doesn't offer to come and help Ruth. And Ruth doesn't ask her to do it. And Ruth says, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. And Naomi says, bless you. Please, we need you to do this. And so Ruth, the Bible in Ruth chapter 2, we find that Ruth goes out into a random field. She picks a field randomly. She doesn't know whose it is. She just picks a field and she goes. And she got really could we say God guided her maybe? Okay, I just making sure. We're in a church, so I feel like we can do that. So maybe God guided her to this field, but she randomly picks it. And it is a very well-run field. It's owned by a very respectable person who we're introduced to in Ruth chapter 2 as Boaz. And Boaz shows up partway into the day. And he sees this Moabitess gleaning on the edges of his field. Now, that's not a problem because Leviticus says it's okay, right? And he notices she's very industrious. She's working very hard. So he goes up to the person who's in charge of his harvest, his head person, and he says to them, hey, who is that over there? And he goes, ah, bless her heart. That's Ruth. You've heard the gossip in town, right, about Naomi coming back. The Bible doesn't say gossip, but that's what it was, all right? You've heard that. And she's back, and that's Ruth, her Moabitess daughter-in-law. That's her. And Boaz says, wow, I am impressed. Look at her. She's working hard, and she's taking care of. That is a good person right there. And so when lunch rolls around, Boaz does something that is not required in Leviticus. He invites Ruth to lunch. He says, come over here, eat with me. Eat with my people, the people in my field. He wasn't required to do that. That wasn't part of the deal. He just had to let her glean around the edges and whatever fell. That's all he had to do. But instead, he invites her to come and have a meal with everybody. And he feeds her. In fact, he gives her enough, and she's a thoughtful enough person that she actually takes home part of her meal to Naomi afterwards. She had leftovers and she takes it home. And he has a conversation with Ruth. He says, listen, and he uses this very familial, very kind language, my daughter. I want you to hear that because She was a pagan foreigner. But he still uses a very kind, he talks to her in a kind way. Listen, my daughter, stay right here with us when you gather grain. Don't go to any other fields. Stay right behind the young women working in my field. He basically says, don't go anywhere else. During the whole harvest, you stay with me. And we're going to find out that she actually stays with him through the barley harvest and through the wheat harvest. The cool thing about this, by the way, is this whole story takes place in May. So this is like the same time period that this story takes place in. And so the harvest would have gone through most of July, those two harvests. And she stays in those fields the whole time. And then he takes it one step further. He goes to the person who's in charge and he says, now you listen to me. You make sure that young lady is taken care of. You do not let anybody mess with her. You protect her. You watch out for her. And what's more, if she's thirsty, make sure she gets something to drink. And also, I want you to make sure that you don't just, if something drops, I want you to actually deliberately drop grain for her to pick up. Again, not required. I want you to deliberately do that. By the way, the beauty of that Leviticus rule, by the way, is that there's dignity for everybody in it, isn't there? Those who have much get to give, but those who are receiving get to work for it. They have to do something to receive it. They can't just stay at their home. They have to go out into the field, and it is not easy work. So there's dignity for everybody in this. And Boaz goes the extra mile to make sure that this woman, this foreigner, is taken care of. The extra mile. Don't go anywhere else. Hey, guys, make sure you throw a little bit more on the ground so she has plenty. At the end of the day, the Bible tells us that Ruth goes home with about half an ephah of wheat. That's a lot, right? Everybody's looking at me. You don't know how much an ephah is? All right, let me go ahead and help you know how much she went home. She went home with 30 pounds of barley. And to give you an idea of how much that was the wages for a field hand for a month. That was the portion of grain that they were given by somebody. So she goes home with a month's worth of barley grain. Can we say that Boaz was generous? Can we say that Ruth was faithful and worked hard? That 30 pounds didn't just show up. She had to work for it. But we find two people who are being faithful, two people who are taking their obligations seriously. Now, I know you guys are all wondering, what on earth was that earlier thing in the sermon? In 1 Kings chapter 7, we find that Solomon is building the grand temple, the temple for God. His builder's name is Huram. Huram cast two bronze pillars, 27 feet tall, 18 feet in circumference. And they are named Jachin and Boaz. Now, Huram was working for who? Solomon. Who is Solomon to Boaz and Ruth? Last week I gave you, you should have a hint, because I told you that David was the great-grandson of Boaz and Ruth. Great, great. How many greats do I need to throw in there? Let's just say a couple. So Solomon names one of the pillars in the temple, not just any pillar. There are two of them at the entry. It's what holds everything up. That's what pillars do, right? They hold things up. He names one Jachin and he names the other Boaz. Remember last week I told you that names matter in the Bible? So Jachin, what does Jachin mean? Jachin means he will establish. Boaz, if you were to Google it right now, say what does the name Boaz mean? It'll come up with a couple different names or meanings. One is fleetness, fast. That's kind of the common one. But in this particular context, for this particular pillar, Most of the places that I look, and my personal belief is that the alternate word for Boaz, the alternate meaning is the correct one, which is in strength. In strength, strength. So Solomon takes these two pillars that are going to hold up his temple, and he names them in strength, he will establish. In strength, he will establish. And then, as was the custom, the kings would have to stand by these pillars that reminded them that in strength, he will establish. Kings, by definition, are generally strong. They're being reminded that they are strong, and yet there's something bigger and more important that they have to stand by. So what are they establishing? I believe that the answer is found in the book of Isaiah. And I believe that because Jesus actually quotes the book of Isaiah when he is cleaning up the temple. It says, "You've turned it into a den of thieves," when it's supposed to be a house of prayer. But he's quoting Isaiah, and this is the quote from Isaiah. "I will bless the who commit themselves to the Lord. I will bring them to my holy mountain of Jerusalem and will fill them with joy in my house of prayer, because my temple will be called a house of prayer for all nations. In strength, he will establish a place of prayer for all, even the foreigners." How appropriate that Solomon names that pillar after his grandpa, great-great-grandpa, who takes care in his strength of a foreigner who shows up in his field. And yeah, he's also taking care of a relative, as we're going to find out more next week. But he uses his strength to establish something more than himself. How are you strong today? How are you strong? Some of you say, "Oh, well, I'm not." Everybody here is strong somehow. Maybe you are economically strong, financially strong. Maybe you're physically strong. Maybe you're emotionally strong. Maybe you have a strong work ethic, but you're strong. And my question for you today is, how are you using your strength to take care of the widow, the orphan, Oh, you guys are a little slow on that. Does it feel a little political to you today? Would it help you if you knew that I plan my sermons over a year ahead of time? If it bothers you to say the word foreigner out loud in the political climate that we're living in, perhaps you're letting your politics run your religion, as opposed to your religion running your politics. You might want to say, "Ken, this feels very political. Please leave that out of church." This is biblical. Taking care of the least of these is not political. And when politics wants to insert itself and try to claim that this is politics and not biblical, there's a clear misunderstanding of the Bible. We have been called as followers of Christ to take care of the least of these, the widow, the orphan, and say it with me.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. Loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life takeaways for this message. Swipe up in today's show notes and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.